Dentistry is changing. Technology, education, and resources are closer to our fingertips now more than ever. Are you ready to learn what millennial dentists are doing to exceed patient expectations, enjoy dentistry more, and take more vacations? Or how this generation can join up with the previous ones to make for an unstoppable dental team? Well, wait no longer. Here are your hosts of The Millennial Dentist, Dr. Holsinger, Dr. Payray, and Dr. Sully Sullivan.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Millennial Dentist Podcast. We are, Payman and I are here at his office, Friday morning, beautiful day in July, and we are super pumped to have a super special guest, one that both Payman and I have looked up to for a while after spending tons of time on Dental Town in school, but Howard Foran himself.
Yes.
Welcome, Doc.
Oh, man, it's a huge honor to be on your show. I it's so damn cool to watch you guys.
Yeah, we appreciate it, though.
We appreciate it. Honestly, this is extreme. I mean, last month when Ryan, me and Ryan talked, I'm like, man, can we get him? And I've been very blessed and excited to do this, man. Been waiting for this.
What's good with you?
What's new with me? Gosh, you know, I mean, I just celebrated my 30-year anniversary in my dental office, and you just open yours up, so you're like my kids. you know, just having grandbabies, that's the new thing with me. Just got another one, so, you know, that's just, you know, when you're 54, the neatest thing in the world is grandchildren. So, you guys have kids?
No kids.
No kids.
No kids. So you guys are dental millennial geniuses.
We're trying to be. We're trying to change the perspective a little bit. I feel like millennials are getting a bad rap a little bit. So we're trying to show the positives of what our generation is bringing to the table.
Well, you know, when you get to my age, you don't figure out what's right and wrong. You just start recognizing patterns. And every generation, going back to recorded literature, thinks the next generation is going to screw up. But then you look at every 100 years it goes by, the civilization just gets better and better and better. So this is a pattern. It's kind of like if you go into religion, like 20% think the end of the world is coming. So you leave that, you say, well, is it or is it not? Well, you go into Wall Street, 20% think the stock market's going to crash any day. I mean, you go into dentistry, 20% think when I got out of school 30 years ago, it was capitation was going to ruin dentistry. Then it was OSHA and then it was HIPAA. Now it's corporate dentistry. And then you realize after 30 years, hey, look, nobody can keep all their patients in dentistry. So why is anybody else going to do it? I mean, you go to any dental office with 5,000 charts, 4,000 of them never came back. So you really think Aspen Dental and Heartland is your problem?
No, you're exactly right. And most people aren't tracking that. So they have no idea what's actually happening when they look at it. Hey, a couple things. So I guess the first thing I really wanted to get your opinion on, talk to you about, and then there's a couple of things I want to hit on. But, you know, priority one is, like you said, you're celebrating your 30th anniversary, Payman 6 months in, or we're both basically 2 years out of school, 3 years out of school. If you had to give your nuggets of wisdom to the graduating dentist, the new dentist, I mean, you've seen it all. You've been through those generational changes, the changes in dentistry. You know, what are you telling new graduates? What is your advice? I mean, that's the big thing I want to hear, is kind of just talk about a lot of that stuff.
All right. Feel free to interrupt me. I mean, I don't want to rant.
Oh, we will. Don't worry.
I don't want you guys have to like get up and go get a beer just to let to wait for I to shut up.
Listen to old man Foran talk about that.
Well, you know, it's the same pattern. Like, let's switch from dentistry to a real estate agent. You know, you get this card and they get all this alphabet soup behind their name. You don't know what any of that crap means. Then you go talk to your 401k guy and he's got all this alphabet soup behind your name. Nobody knows what any of that alphabet soup. No, they don't even know the difference between a DMD and a DDS, let alone a MAGD, all that diplomat crap. What you need the most is the chairside manner. What you need the most is to be able to connect with humans. Now, the research is showing that you only got like 15, 20, 30 seconds to make this happen. And the dentists that crush it, they have that skill with their staff. They're able to attract and retain quality key staff. Like, talk about practice management. I mean, there are a dozen amazing practice management consultants, but you don't even have to learn any of that if you hired an office manager who already knows all that. If you can attract and retain, I mean, some dentists get to work and, you know, they're control freaks. They don't understand leadership. They'll walk in their office. They'll walk up to the front desk. And the first thing they'll say is, why do I have an opening from 2 to 3? And she's sitting there looking at you like, you're a monster. Like, good morning to you. You're an idiot.
So true.
And you know, having the soft stuff is the only thing that matters. You sell the invisible. you know, it, when I go buy an iPhone, I mean, shit, I could, you could buy it from an ATM machine. I mean, it's an iPhone. It's a standardized product. When you go buy a Coca-Cola, you actually do get it out of a machine. Bottled water, it's just bottled water. But when I come up to you and you say, well, I know you came in here for a $20 oil change, but I really need to change your transmission fluid and your air filter pump. Well, in about 5 seconds, I'm going to look at you and think, okay, are you selling me for money or do I believe you? Your air conditioner goes out. So some man shows up and he says, you know what? Your air conditioner is old. You need a $9,000 new air conditioner. And in about 5 seconds, I'm just looking at you thinking, do you just want $9,000? Do I really? You know, you're selling the invisible. When you tell them that they have four cavities and that they're $250 each, they're thinking, okay, do you just want a grand? I mean, $1,000? I mean, are you trying to go to Disneyland? I mean, you know, so to get that, it's all the soft stuff. So the dentist who understands people and makes a conscious effort. Now, some dentists are just born monsters. They're dicks. They're not nice guys. But they turn Hollywood when they go to the dental office. I mean, look at these actors. You know, they'll tell some actor, okay, now we're going to do a movie and you're going to be Gandhi. Well, they're just like, okay, I'll become Gandhi. And then the whole movie, they're Gandhi. When you walk in that door, you go from your car to on stage with your staff and your patients. And the people that just know how to press the flesh, run for mayor, have the right look, make people likable in 5 or 10 seconds. So you go and do a hygiene check. I mean, some people go down and they sit down. The first thing they do is start looking at the x-rays. It's like, well, good morning to you. You know, am I just a set of teeth in a chair or am I a human? But then there's that other dentist who walks in there and just makes eye contact and grabs her hand. I mean, I feel like, I mean, like I'm in Phoenix where there's a gazillion 80-year-old ladies that retire down here that aren't going to live in the snow in North and South. 10% of this town is from Canada. My God, what is the only thing a 70, 80, 90, 100-year-old woman wants when she goes to the dental office? A big old bear hug from Dr. Ferran.
Hell, some loving, yeah.
I only kiss them on the forehead if they're like in their 60s, but by 70, 80, 90, 100, it's on the mouth. They freaking love it. I give them a big old hug. I tell them they look great. I ask them what's going on. And you establish that likability and trust. I've had my dental assistant for 30 years. There's about 1,000, there are probably several hundred old men that only come to my office because Jan always gives them a big hug. I mean, that, you know, it's that's the skill set that makes you successful. And if you got that down and you do really shitty dentistry, you'll still have a $1 million practice. And if you went to all the alphabet soup stuff, you went to every institute, Panky, Sphere, Dawson, Coyce, or the whatever, and have all this diplomat crap behind your names, and you don't connect with your staff and your patients, you're always, always behind the eight ball. So that's my first point.
So let me stop you there, because I want to recap that, because that those are huge. So basically, the first point being, you know, relationship with team, being able to connect with them and not be a dick, basically. And then the other is how do you communicating with patients. Yeah. And what's funny is I feel like most graduates, we graduate and we're like, oh, well, we need to go figure out how to do this, do that. And I would say I'd be willing to bet that knowing the type of people that end up in dental school and our colleagues, that probably less than 70% of them, at least half of them, suck at that. And you know, and they're and then when they're and no one's getting CE in that. You know, no one's trying to learn how to be a better communicator or try to, how do I work with patients or, you know, and I love, and frankly, the word sell dentistry, right? Like if we don't create value for what we do, then ultimately it falls on dead ears. And we are just, the car salesman trying to get them to change their transmission fluid or whatever that is. So I love those two points, because that I think is probably some of the biggest reason we've been successful is not our ability to, I mean, yeah, we've had really good mentors and we've learned a lot of good skills, but we could both talk to a brick wall and we're pretty good at creating that value, but the majority of people graduating aren't. And then we don't want to go learn how to do it.
Well, like when I go get my oil changed, do I really care if the kid is 25 years old and 6 months out of auto mechanic school or 55 or 65? I assume you work here. I assume you know how to change my oil. I assume you know how to fix my filling. You think into it because you know all the little details that Carl Misch can place an implant better than your dad, and your dad can place one better than you. But the consumer doesn't ever think things like that. And the deans are accepting everybody with the wrong skill sets. Like, how do you get into dental school? Well, you got to get A's in calculus, physics, geometry, and chem. Well, who are those people? The idiot nerd sitting in the library every night who never joined a frat or never had a date. Or I mean, every single night at Creighton, I heard the same thing. Ding. The library will be closing in 10 minutes. And then I'd walk back from the library to Swanson Hall dorm, and all the business majors are drinking beer. They're sneaking in girls into an all-boys Jesuit dorm. And I thought they were, like, vile and disgusting. I thought, like, we're here to learn, and you're making abuse of
this. Oh, yeah.
And then they do the demographics.
I'll let you mention that. Go ahead. I'll tell after this about the same thing about in dental school. I feel the one thing that I always complained was like, why didn't we have business classes? Why didn't they really teach us management of how you manage your money and business? But then when I got out going through a school and then getting out, I realized really business is not what we needed back in school as much as we needed communication with the patient. Like what you just mentioned today is so much more valuable to me and a lot of the kids in school. Now, I'm blessed enough, and I think genetically that plays a big role too, Howard, as far as how you become likable. How you make that persona and that the patients like you because of you're not only their doctor, but they can call you their friends when they're out of town or anything like that. So that whole communication thing, I feel like that could be more emphasis in schools also. What's your input on that versus business?
Did your schools teach you your religious beliefs? Did the school teach you your cultural, your music beliefs, your dietary habits? I mean, dentistry is a craft. It's a hands work with your hands, welding.
Mechanic.
It's all surgery. You wanted to be a surgeon. They taught you how to be a surgeon. Then you walk out of school and say, well, hey, you didn't teach me whether I should have voted for Trump or Hillary or be atheist, agnostic or Jewish or, you know, I mean, the schools just do their craft, and there's no one in that school that ever ran a business. I mean, those who do, and those who can't teach. So I don't think there's anybody even in the school that could teach it. And the schools, not only are they accepting the wrong skill sets of a personable person, since we sell the invisible and it's a trust-based society. I mean, when I check into a hotel, why did the maid put that wrap around the toilet seat? Because she's selling the invisible. I didn't see her clean the toilet. She's trying to tell me, I don't know her. She doesn't know me. She's saying, I clean the toilet. When you order a drink, or you order room service. You know, I'm a health food fanatic. I believe that you have to have cranberry juice, just heals all your organs. So every night before I go to bed, I always want a double Grey Goose with a splash of cranberry juice in there just for health purposes.
Seems perfect.
And nice. And they still leave a piece of the straw on because the bartender's saying, we're a class act. I mean, we're selling the invisible. And dentistry is all invisible. Nobody knows if they have a cavity or not. Nobody knows if what you say is true. And then the other thing that dental schools do wrong is they do the wrong demographics. Like they thought that if they swelled the classes from 4,000 to 6,000, it would push you guys all out into the rural. And that's why everybody thought the best idea for availability and accessibility, when you look at the Midwest, where 11% of these towns don't have one single dentist. But now what they know for a fact is, who's the only person who will live in a town of 5,000? A boy born in a town of 5,000. So if you want dentists to go rural, then stop accepting them from Memphis and Nashville and Chattanooga and start accepting them only from towns under 5,000, and they'll go back there. And so, so the skill sets are not met.
One of the big things I learned very quickly on, and we see it all the time, I'm sure you see it, is when we graduate, when we go to dental school, we're taught to make these just giant treatment plans from start to finish and diagnose everything we see, every little thing. And then we like print that out. We give that to the patient and we say, here's your treatment. We're going to start here and go. And it's like this big, you know, in dental school, that may not be that big of a number just because, well, dental school's prices are cheaper. Now you do that in, you know, with a new patient that comes in, who's been to a bunch of other dentists and doesn't have, you know, has had some dental work, but you know, doesn't have done it. And you give them a $15,000 treatment plan, then they're freaking gone. You know, like they're running out the door. They're going to the next dentist to get a second opinion, who's going to do something less than you did, obviously. And then they're never coming back to you. So, you know, that was a big thing for me, was trying to learn how to treatment plan a little differently, not to not tell patients what they need, but just not to overwhelm patients out of the gate like kind of the mindset we were taught in dental school.
Well, what are you driving right now? What car are you driving? How old is it? What did it cost you?
An 06 Toyota Tundra. It was like 12 grand.
So you're driving a $12,000 car that's basically 11 years old?
Yes.
All right. And Pay Ray, what are you driving?
Nissan Altima 2010 with 80,000 miles on it. I bought it brand new for dental school, and I've been driving it since I graduated.
But what did it cost? What did you pay for?
It cost 20, right? I mean, it's been paid off, but 24,000 then I bought it.
Okay, so here's the point. So the average price of a new car in America right now is about 30,000 bucks, okay? It's actually like 33,000. Let's just say 30,000 bucks. So I'm going to ask you guys, what percent of Americans in their lifetime will buy an average new car?
A lot.
What percent?
50%. 60, okay. 75%.
Okay, so you say 50 to 75%. What percent of dentists have never ever sold a single treatment plan for that price of a new car, 30,000?
90%.
Yeah. So the consumer has shown you, yeah, we dropped $30,000. Hell, what is an F-150 decked out truck cost these days out in the rural areas?
50, 60,000, some of those.
Oh, absolutely. And these people have no problem doing 50, 60. So it's the treatment plan presentation where some people, you know, okay, I'll give you an example. I've got money. I got a 2005 Lexus with like 150,000 miles. Well, I only live 3.0 miles from my dental office and 3.5 miles from dental town. And so I figured the worst case. So every time I take it in for an oil change, they say, well, if you give us your car and give me a check for $95,000, I'll give you a new one. Now, they didn't say you have to buy a new car and I never came back. They just showed me what's going on. And I'm like, well, you know, I just don't want to give you $95,000 to upgrade a Lexus that it's never farted since 2005. And I only drive it 3 miles. And I actually think it's going to be cool because I really want to get a 250,000 miles out of it. I mean, I'm a shite, cheap bastard, and I'm at 140, and I want to get a 250,000 miles out of that. And the bottom line, so you can present that, you know, well, I'll tell you what, I mean, obviously you don't have to do anything. I mean, I don't think anyone's ever died from a dental cavity. Obviously we could just do everything and you could leave here with a brand new car and it's going to cost you 25 grand. Now they don't want to hear, well, number three, we'll need a RCT build up in the crown, and number four, they just want to know a price. You know, yeah. when you go to a car lot and they say, how much is the car? Well, did you want a transmission? Because the transmission is going to be $1,200. Did you want wheels on it? Well, you know, they just shut up and tell me the price. Omar Reed, I watched that guy in Phoenix do it better than anyone. I mean, Omar Reed would walk up there and he'd just look in their mouth. He looked at their x-rays and study models. And he'd say, look, we could do nothing. I'm pretty sure at your funeral, they're not going to say you died from a dental cavity. What you're concerned about, why you came in, you broke that tooth. We can crown that, $1,000. We can start it today. Now, if you want it, but if you said to me, I want to leave with a perfect set of teeth, that's 25 grand. I don't care what you do, but I need to know what you want to do. Well, if you said that to 5 people and one said yes, we did a $25,000 treatment plan. If you said it to 100 people and one said yes, you got a $25,000 treatment plan. I'm telling you, 90% of dentists have never done it one time in their entire life, and half their patients did it in the last 5 years. I mean, this country sells millions. I mean, sometimes they'll sell 25 million new cars a year in this country of 325 million. Clear Choice. Last year, they sold 18,000 arches of all-on-4, 25 grand an arch. And if you're getting upper and lower done, you gave them 50 grand. So they can do that 18,000 times a year. And the dentist practicing across the street has never done it one time in 40 years.
Let me interrupt you with that a little bit, though, because so that's a great point. I totally get that. My question then becomes is, how do we do that? How do you start to do that? And the other thing is, you know, I feel like it all for, and maybe this is the excuse because we've only done this for so long, but then it boils down to money, and you know, and they don't have, and you know, with the car thing, then you know, they don't sell $50,000 cars; they sell $300 payments, right? Like that's the whole mindset there. But I mean, do you believe in kind of that we should be doing more payment plan stuff to make things affordable, or how do we get to the point that we're confident enough to where we can present a $25,000 treatment plan and not shake in our boots?
Well, so in the United States, anything over $1,000 is financed 90% of the time. So only 10% buy purchases over $1,000, a car, a house, and cash. They're always over 65. So those are the idiots you decide to give a discount to. Well, we're going to give you a senior citizen discount since you don't have any kids. You paid off your house. You don't have a car payment. You know, you should give the Mormon lady with five kids the senior citizen discount because she's broke. But yeah, financing is everything. I mean, I'm Irish and we were saved by Mr. Singer. There were like 85 different sewing machine companies. And when you 1 million Irish washed up on the shore after the famine, 40 years before the Statue of Liberty, and the only jobs were textiles. But in the textiles, you had to have a sewing machine. They were $50. There was a one guy from Ireland that had $50, and everybody wanted their $50. So old man Singer said, I'll tell you what, I'll give you the sewing machine, and you'll get a $3 a week job. But on Friday, when you get that $3, you're going to come back and give old man Singer a buck. And he bankrupted everyone. Everybody says that Henry Ford started the assembly line. It's like, okay, but what's the end of the story? Why did they close it down? Because GMAC financing, GM started GMAC financing. He said, old man Ford, he wants $668 cash. You come over to GM and get a Chevy, and we're going to make installment credit. So everybody who comes to an industry with installment credit walks out as the leader. So you have to have financing. And the reason I love Care Credit most, and this is no advertisement, no money, nothing like that, sure, is because the Care Credit, they don't want any new patients because every dentist in America has already signed up for them and used them once. The best thing about Care Credit is to blow your self-limiting beliefs because they will come into your office with your staff and they can say, what do you want to look at all the dentists in this area? Do you want to look by zip code? Do you want to look by, what do you want to look at? And they'll open up and say, okay, your average Care Credit is $400. And for your whole zip code, it's only $418. But look at these two guys, and here's their damn name. Here's their address. These guys, their average is $5,000. So you're telling me that everything's wrong because of Korea and North Putin and Trump met with a Russian and you know all this bullshit, toxic noise, because you would rather backseat drive the White House then backseat drive the man in the mirror. And they'll say, well, dude, how come you're all young, good looking, hot, energetic, and you only did 3 Care Credits last month for 400, and that old fat bald guy across the street did 5 that were over 5,000 last week. Wow. So when you see that, it really checks your balance. I mean, most, you know, so that's why I love Care Credit.
No, that's just huge. That's kind of eye-opening. I mean, that I kind of want to go look at ours now too, because I feel like that's an area where
Bring the rep in.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
It's funny you said Care Credit. We were number one in the country when I was at the corporate, because our office manager, Melinda, she did a great job of doing the Care Credit. We sold $900,000 that year at the Care Credit.
Well, and you don't walk in the room. You don't walk in the room saying, yeah, you know, well, you know, my God, if we did everything you needed, it'd be $5,000. They walk in there and they smile. How are you doing? Great. Well, I'm so excited because you have amazing credit. If we did everything the doctor thinks you need, it would only cost you $80 a month for 3 years to get everything fixed up. And the only thing I heard was, I like you. You're likable. You're sweet. I'm smiling. And who doesn't have $80 a month for 3 years? Boom.
Yep.
And on that treatment plan presentation, I always like to talk about Seinfeld, too. I love stand-up comedy the most. I've done it 100 times because, you know, there's no props. There's no monitors. You know, I don't even like comedians that pull out a puppet or a toy box. I respect Broadway 100 times more than a movie, because some of those movie scenes will take 30, 40 cuts where Broadway's live. And Seinfeld will talk about how on Monday he'll write a joke. And then Tuesday, his whole day, he wants to take one word out of that joke, make it tighter. Wednesday, he'll do the same. So he'll write a joke on Monday, and Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, the rest of the week is, I don't want to say a joke in 19 words if I can say it in 7. And the quiet, the succinct, that's how humans work. So what's the dentist's response? He's staring at an x-ray, babbling about a root canal for 5 minutes. I mean, imagine
we talk ourselves out of stuff.
Oh my God. I mean, if I went to the doctor and said, hey, you need to call, you know, you're 50. You know, when I turned 50, he said, look, you're 50. So you need a colonoscopy. You need an MRI of your brain and you need a, I think that was just it. And I just said, okay. And then that was it. I mean, he didn't explain to me for an hour and a half of what could possibly. And then when I did a colonoscopy, you know, I walked in there. He didn't like show me previous video films he had shot and other people's assholes and all the things he had found from lumps and bumps to a set of car keys. I mean, he just like, you're 50, dude, and colon cancer, you know, we just need to do that.
It's a real deal. Yeah.
And these dentists, they just talk and talk and talk. And then their true implant acceptance rates. And I'll tell you one thing macroeconomically on true implant rates. What we see generally within any zip code in America is that 1 in 3 people always get their cavity filled. 1 in 3 people never get their cavity filled. But it's that you can get that one in the middle. And so the national average closure rate on just a cavity is 38%. And you'll go into a zip code and 80% of the dentists are just doing this 1 out of 3. But then there's a practice in the same building, the same everything, doing 2 out of 3. And the difference is one of them is likable and is really focusing on treatment plan presentation, whether doc's doing it himself or got a treatment plan presenter. And they know, and you're on your chart, you should be asking these keratoconic questions. I mean, you're asking them if they've ever had syphilis, gonorrhea, or chlamydia. I mean, these are questions you ask in a bar on Second Avenue. What the hell is that going to affect on my treatment plan? And that way, when they go in there, they're not saying, well, it's 5,000 stress, and we got to see if we can get your credit approved. And they're thinking, oh, I bet my credit's horrible and it's all this stress. Well, no, we'll just wait or just blah, blah, blah. But ask them on the deal, you know, fill out this form. And then the treatment plan president goes in there and says, oh my God, congratulations. You guys got amazing credit. My God, Solly, we can do everything for $89 a month for 60 months.
So go back to that, because I like this. So you're saying that, because that's kind of how it's been in our office and why we probably suck at it, is it's be like, okay, well, it's going to be, you know, we've got $10,000 of work. We can, you know, you could pay it this way, or we can check your, we can do Care Credit Lending Club and they'll, you know, see if you're approved, blah, blah. So then they go up there and then a lot of times they got to, you know, I don't know, I guess I miss out on some of it. They have to do it either at home or in the office sometimes. But, and so the we're not doing that very well, clearly. What are you saying? You try to get this, some of the stuff like pre-approved on the front end, or like, or what's your, the workflow for that?
Well, I don't, you know, I don't really care what you do as long as work. Like I'll go to hamburgers because, you know, I grew up, I cut my teeth in Sonic Drive-In. My dad owned a Sonic Drive-In. That's about the only place I ever saw my dad. And I spent a decade in there. That's where I learned all my business and loved it. But look at hamburgers. I mean, there's Wendy's, there's Carl's Jr.'s, there's In-N-Out, there's McDonald's. There's 100 ways to make a hamburger. They owned up some, what is that new one there? Five Guys or something? I never even been there, but now there's some Five Guys that have got a hamburger. And they weren't
afraid. That's an East Coast burger, baby.
They weren't afraid of McDonald's. They weren't afraid of Wendy's. I mean, they knew Wendy's and McDonald's and Burger King were on every corner, but they opened up right there across the street from them, ready to go. And I guess, are they doing good? But the bottom line, I don't care what you do. The first thing you got to do is start measuring it. Because I'll walk into a dentist, I'll say, hey, Sully, if 100 people walk in with a cavity, how many do you close and convert to drill, fill, and bill? And they just look at you with deer eyes. Okay, yeah. So if you don't know you're getting an F or a D, what's the first rule at AA meeting? You have to admit you have a problem. You have to go in there and say, hey, I'm Howard and I'm an alcoholic. You have to go in there and say, I only got a 38% close rate. And then you share that with your team. Like we know in our team, we can line up everybody. We have a pecking order on who has the highest close rate. I mean, my 30-year dental assistant, Jan, I mean, everybody in the office wants her to do the job. But sometimes she can't. She's busy. She's doing something else. So then who would be your second go-to person? Well, we'd want Dawn. I don't even make the top 50 percentile, and I'm a dentist with an MBA. The alphabet soup shit means nothing. And the terms we use, 5,000 words of Latin and Greek, they don't even understand. But I would start measuring it first. Then I would realize, okay, if half of our patients have bought a $30,000 new car, what's the difference? Well, you go see the car, it just says 30 grand. And then you sit there and then you go see if you can get approved. A lot of these people get approved before they go in there. But, you know, you're walking in the room and just saying, hey, gosh, congratulations, man. We can do the whole thing, the whole $30,000 new car for just $450 a month for 60 months. Is that something you want to do? And so 10% of the dentists can do that every single month. It's a not, yeah. It's at least 10%. And you had a great guy on your podcast, Danny. I mean, Danny Dominique. Yeah. I mean, where's he from? Beverly Hills, Manhattan, New York City?
Louisiana.
He's from Lafayette, Louisiana, where the shoes you're wearing is what they wear in church. Sandals, slippers. And this guy is doing that every other day in Lafayette because he's good looking. He's charming. He's succinct. You know what we do? About the only thing we do is if we took out all the teeth, place just four little implants, put a denture on there. It looked like a Hollywood smile. It's $25,000 an arch. We could do the upper and lower. Is that what you want to do? Well, he's just all good looking and shaking your hand. And they're like, yeah. Looks like I'm not going to be able to buy that F-150 Ford pickup truck this year. I'll have to buy that 2 years down the road. You know, it's just that's your competition, not Heartland and Aspen and Pacific across the street.
So I kind of want to – the next thing I wanted to hit on before we wrap up or transition
Dude,
a little bit
on
is
–
I'm hitting on you just a tad. You're a little bald for my taste. The student loans is like the biggest thing that's everybody is terrified about graduating. And it's you graduated and bought things in the era where it was like 12% interest only or 15% whatever – and yeah, student loans are high. They're getting 7-8%. But we're seeing that over and over and over be a big fear, and it is a reality, but a big fear of holding new graduates back. So I'd love to kind of get your thoughts on, how do we deal with that and what are the ways to overcome that and look past that to continue to invest in yourself and your practice and make yourself grow, but managing that too.
Hey,
and your retirement.
Is that Dr. Hosslinger coming in?
No. Hey. How are you, sir?
How are you?
Tommy.
Sorry,
you're good.
Potential patient. Payment will take this. We'll keep going.
I would say this, that number one, student loan debt is not anyone's problem. The only problem that you'll ever have lives in between your ears. It's all these self-limiting beliefs. It's, you're your own worst enemy. No one else is going to be your enemy. You talk about a $350,000 student loan. You think that's bad. What percent of that class will eventually walk out there and buy a house someday that costs more than $350,000?
Most of them.
All of them. What percent of them will get divorced?
Half of them.
What's the average divorce cost in dentistry?
Super expensive, I would imagine.
I've never seen one under $1 million. Mine was 3.8 million.
Oh,
it was
gosh.
87 times. Let me take that. I should know this number now.
You're probably not bitter about that at all.
But the bottom line is, Ryan, take 3.8 million divided by 87,000. I'm just curious myself. My divorce cost me 43 times more than my damn student loan deal. The reason you're not opening up a dental office is not because you have student loans, not because you're going to buy a house bigger than that someday, not because you're going to get divorced for millions. The reason you know what to do, start your own business. You've just decided not to do it. I mean, it's like I'm fat. I know when I'm eating ice cream that I shouldn't be. I know I should never eat that shit again, but I decided I'm going to eat it anyway. You know that if you have $350,000 in student loans, working for Aspen and making $125,000 a year and then paying taxes, and then you get comfortable, so you go buy a house and a car and start eating out three nights a week, that it's a trap and you're going to be there forever. They pay you just enough to kill all your dreams. I mean, they're like, now you're coming home and your wife's pregnant, has a kid, and she's like, well, you make $125,000 a year. My mama only makes $25,000, and I don't know, it seems risky to walk away from that job and start your own business, and why don't we just stay put and kill all of our dreams and you go work for the man for the rest of your life? And the bottom line, you know you should start a dental office, so it's not the student loans. I mean, you borrowed $350,000, but you can't borrow twice that amount to buy an existing office. It's just all in your head. I graduated May 11th of 87, and my office saw its first patient September 21, 87.
That was a couple months.
And I'd only had done like 50 fillings, you know, what was it? 14 units of endo, you know, 10 sure. units of removable. I mean,
well, my thing is too, is like you're investing in yourself. Like if you look at one thing, I mean, and the default rate on dental practices is like super low, you know,
it's 0.4%. So 99.6% make it with a 0.4% default rate.
Yeah, that to me, like right there is huge. And like you said, the idea of learning like $350,000 is a lot of money. But the reality is, you know, I mean, we're both over $1 million in debt now between, you know, practices and houses and things. And so it's like learning to kind of be comfortable with the debt is good. What are your thoughts? I mean, the other thing I'm seeing is that I'd like to kind of touch on, and which is, I think part of the problem is we have a lot of your age group, like my dad, who is
How
not
old is your dad?
54. 53.
God, so I'm the same age. He's born, so I'm the same age, 54. So I'm your dad.
Yeah. I think
I'll
he graduated
be,
88.
I'll be your other dad.
Yeah, you'd be my other dad. So, you know, Papa Ferran. So, you know, is that generation is now starting to get on cruise control / you know, going down. They're not investing in their practices. They're stopping to invest in technology. They're trying to tighten up because they haven't done well in retirement. And so they're trying to get real lean because they think they're going to take home more. And so now you have – they're less willing to hire associate dentists. And so there's not a lot of, you know, associateship type practices that it seems for new graduates to get a part of. Do you see what I'm talking about, or do you think that's an issue?
I would say this. You know, when I was a little kid, you always heard all your older grandpas and uncles and everybody in the community. There's a big conspiracy theory that the only reason America always went to war is because it was so good for the economy. Well, when you World War II, you destroyed Germany and Japan. Those were the only two countries that made cars and refrigerators and anything you wanted to buy. So that was really good for the American economy. All the wars since then, you've gone to war with countries that don't sell one
don't
thing
shit.
At Walmart. So wars are a total expense. I'm all for war if it's against all the countries that make everything at Walmart, okay? But if they don't make anything at Walmart, you're wasting your damn time. And the point being, after you destroy that competition, after World War II, there was this massive expansion of wealth because if the only place that wasn't leveled and you could buy anything was the United States. Well, they still think that they were the greatest generation, and they think we can go back to that time. They act like Germany and Japan don't exist. Now it's not even Germany and Japan anymore. Hell, it's Italy and France and Denmark and China and India. I mean, everybody on Earth is making – I mean, Brazil sells airplanes. Can you believe someone can make an airplane wearing a thong? I mean, every country is making amazing shit that's showing up everywhere in the world. So yeah, this post-World War II that from 1945, you just do your time 40 years in the Fortune 500, get your pension, go home and go play. Those days are completely gone, and they're never coming back unless there's some massive war in Europe, which there could be. I mean, they did it twice last century. I mean, if they did it just one more really good time this time, then, you know, maybe those days could come back. But then you have China already outproducing them. I mean, you would need the whole Eastern Hemisphere to go up in flames to return that mentality from 1945 to 1980, and it's gone and it's not coming back. So yeah, those dentists are going to basically. When do you think a dentist is going to wake up someday and say, you know what, I never need another dollar again? He's thinking at 60, he's thinking, well, I'm going to retire at 65, and then at 63, his wife says, let's do a cruise in Italy. Okay, we'll retire at 66. And then at 65, she's like, you know, we need to replace our cars. And then just when every man thinks the house is finally all fixed up, what does your wife say? You know, we need all new furniture, and let's paint and let's remodel because everything's perfect. So let's just, you know, just destroy $50,000 in capital and put all new different colored shit in the house. So it never ends. It's the pattern. It's the pattern behavior. So, yeah, these guys aren't going to retire. I did a de novo. I think the most important, I would say financial things that bother me about millennials is like Arizona has two dental schools. They're both private. They're very expensive. These kids are coming out of there at $350. There's a lot of Mormons in Arizona and Utah. They come out with two kids and they're $550,000 in debt. And their mom and their mother-in-law live right up the street. And it's like, okay, dude, you need to go back home and you need to live with your parents and you need to drive a $1,000 jalopy and you need to start your own office. You need to live below your means hardcore for 10 years. Oh, hell no. They go, well, I've already got two kids, so I need a five-bedroom house, and I was $500,000 then, and I got a $500,000 house, and my sweetie wants the hottest SUV because she didn't want to pull up in the LDS parking lot, the only one not driving a new Suburban, and they just live so far above their means. And then you do it with this technology stuff. Your dad, you know, here's you and your here's how my walnut brain, your dad walnut. We buy a $17 Impergum impression from 3M. We send it up to Straight, and he makes a $99 zirconium crown, and we cement it. Here's what you do. Well, why would you want a $17 impression when you can have a $17,000 3M true definition scanner because dad's not investing in technology? And why send it to the lab man for $99 when I could buy a $150,000 CAD-CAM machine and mill it chair side? Because my lab man, he's made 10,000 crowns in 20 years, but I've never made one. So my best idea is I should make them, or I'll have my assistant make them because she's never made a crown either. And 2D Pano, I mean, how does an orthodontist, if an orthodontist can't do ortho with a Pano and a Ceph, he needs, what does he need, a Ouija board? Well, I think I'm just going to get a $100,000 CBCT. You guys buy every gosh darn piece of technological needless shit every time you turn around. And that's the other thing I see. When you see a boomer like me driving a Lexus, it's paid for.
Yeah.
When you see a millennial kid driving a Lexus, It's probably leased, or it's on a 5-year payment plan. It's just living beyond your means. I mean, a fool and their money always part. And in my 30 years of dentistry, I'm in Phoenix. I'm across the street from the Guadalupe Indian Reservation. Lots of people over there, dirt floors, undocumented workers. A lot of them are from Mexico coming and going. I've never had one not pay their bill in cash. Who are the only people that jerk my chain? Millionaires. And so your daddy is 54. He's got bank, so he ain't parting with it. A millennial doesn't have a dollar. I mean, they got $500,000 student loans, bought a practice. They don't even, money is just, it's all negative. So why not just add more? They spend sure. money they don't have. And you know, if you walk into a study club and you say, you know, I think the fastest, easiest, cheapest way to do a crown is just with three burrs, a triple tray impression, and send it to old man Frank up the street for $99. Everybody's like, well, you're just kind of a horrible person and a dick and a bad dentist. I bought an oral scanner and a CAD-CAM machine, and I send my x-ray to Denmark and you're like, yeah, dude. And you're going to be paying interest on other people's money when you're 60.
Well, so my argument, I wish
a millennial was synonymous with the word minimalism. I wish millennial meant minimalism. They lived at home. They drive used cars. They save their money. But they just seems like they part with that money more than any generation I've laid eyes on.
No, we're bad about that. We want it, and we want it now. We don't want to wait for it. We feel like when we graduated, we've earned something and probably gotten somewhere. Really, we're just getting to square one. Now, I think I disagree a little bit with like some of the technology in that I feel like, you know, what's going to – I feel like especially the older dentists who are kind of – you know, cruising though, if you're going to stop investing in the technology, eventually you're going to get passed by our generation because we're going to be able to do it faster, cheaper, better. And that's what patients
okay,
want.
Okay. Name the technology that's going faster, cheaper, better that the old people should get.
Well, I think same day crowns is one that's going to be in the city.
I mean, that is so bullshit. I mean, I've been a dentist for 30 years. I tell anybody in Arizona they need a crown, they only got two questions. Oh my God, I'm afraid. Are you going to give me a shot? Or oh my God, how much is that going to cost?
Well, yeah, but your point though,
your cost, and all you hear is they want it same day.
But your point though is that's a 30 year. That's the past 30 years. I think the next 30 years are going to be, I don't want to take off work. That's 2 days. I'm losing money. I need to be able to come in and get the crown done and be gone. I think that's the future of where we're going to. I mean, that's how, and along with that is it's the same way. I mean, our generation, when we call, we want something. We want it now. If you don't answer your phone, we're going to the next dentist,
yeah,
the next
that,
person.
That I agree with 1,000%.
And so I think we have to start to think about how we're doing dentistry differently a little bit, just because the consumer's changing.
I tend to disagree with Soli in this regard of as far as the same day crown. I love the technology, but the same day doing something, and Howard said it, from trying to do something that the lab guy did for so many years and trying to replicate that into do it yourself or teach, train your staff to make these crowns, especially when you start talking about aesthetic or anterior, because I don't think it's worth it. I honestly don't think it's worth it. I don't, in a long term, in a long run, I don't really see it. The use, I would say, if you could make a good relationship with a lab and become that $90, $95, because that's what I do. I'm getting my crowns for 80-something.
Yeah, but it's also a numbers game, too, from a standpoint of, like, the volume you're doing, for one.
No, I'm talking about doing the, yes, but Howard's saying, I think in the long run, when you have a practice
but
that's established.
Howard, when was the last time maybe you're a bad example, but when was the last time a lab guy sent you an impression back and didn't send the crown back?
Sent the impression back and not the crown.
Like they called you and said, I'm going to need a new impression.
Oh, well, you know, that's something that you get better at. Let me rant on that.
Because my point is like, I think the one thing that's nice about sort of like CAD CAM dentistry, and obviously I believe that, is that, and I get that. I see your point that the lab guy's made crowns for 20 years, and so he's going to be better at that. But the difference is like, they can also make your shit do better. And so I think that one of the benefits of milling your own crowns and some of that is it makes you a better dentist, because they're not sending, the majority of labs aren't sending, because if they were sending back every impression that sucked, because they're making it work, right? They're figuring out how to make it work so that you don't have to, because then you're going to find another lab that's going to do that. You see my point?
What percent of your friends, you've been at school 2 years, what percent of all your classmates are right now in associate position?
What would you say? Probably 35%?
Most of them.
No, a lot of them are going to be corporate or.
Yeah, probably, are you talking about? I mean, an employee
corporate.
Somewhere. Whether it be
corporate. Okay, maybe let's say 60%. Let's say 60% are employees.
60% are employees, whether it's their dad, private sector, associate. How many of those 60% are happy and say, I want to stay here forever? Or do they have major issues with who they're working for, whether it's private or corporate or whatever?
I'd probably say 20% of those.
I would say half of them are happy. Half of them become content as time goes on. They just get used to that style of dentistry. So it's just very hard to say.
So you say half of them aren't happy.
Correct.
And is that any more likely to occur at corporate or private, or is it about the same? Same ratio?
I would say it happens more in a corporate than associateship, whether as if you know somebody.
Yeah. So and what percent of them, do the doctor they're working for, they say, man, that's just a humble, laid-back guy. I really like that guy. He's a mentor of mine. I can go to him with any problem, question. Versus how many of them say, he's kind of a dick.
I'd probably say 10% were the mentor of that half group. I mean, it's a small – I would imagine that
– 1 out of 4. I would say 25.
The majority of them probably don't have that ideal relationship.
Yeah, okay. So the bottom line is the natural selection. When you have to get A's in calculus, physics, geometry – you got some guy who sat in a library, learned all this shit, thinks he's all that in a bag of chips. And these lab people, every single one of them are afraid of you. You're a doctor. Just go walk up to a stranger in the street and say, hey, can I ask you a question? I want you to describe not a doctor, not a lawyer, but a dentist. Describe a dentist in 3 words. Listen to their 3 words. Arrogant, condescending, asshole. You know, and then these labs can't call you up and say, hey, you're young, you're out of school. I could show you a few tricks. I've made 20,000 crowns. You ought to come over. They're afraid you're going to say, what? My crown's not perfect? You're an idiot. Retake the impression, you Neanderthal. I'm sending it to someone else. You have to use a lab that you can drive over there to. You have to establish your likability and trust. You got to go there and say, hey, how you doing, dude? I'm 2 years out of school. I don't want to send my lab clear across the country to somebody I can't talk to. I want to come in here and I want to tell you that I'm sure anybody who's done 100 times more crowns than me learned something I didn't learn. And they walked for me. That was an old German guy. Oh my gosh. What was his name? Wolfgang. God dang, it was 87. I wonder if that guy's alive. I hope he's not alive and heard me just ask that on the phone or on the podcast. And you know, I called him and I said, hey, how did my impression look? And it was just like dead silence. And he's like, do you have a question? I said, well, you know, I went to University of Missouri, Kansas City. There's guys out here from UCLA and USC. I mean, is it good? And it's just like a dead pause. And I mean, he was afraid to say anything. So finally, I went down there, and he spent like half a day. He walked, I mean, there's 100 in pans, and he's showing me all this stuff, and he's showing me the death guys. He taught me one perfect lesson. He goes, you know why I had to send you a reduction coping? I said, because I didn't reduce enough? He said, no, because you took the impression before you made the temporary. You could not have put a temporary on that tooth and adjusted the temporary and not have drilled right through that temporary. But what did you do? Lazy. You took the impression left, and you had Jan make the temporary. And Jan probably took 30 minutes to make temporary. You and Jan could have made the temporary together in 4 minutes, and you could have worked out if you can't see the impression on the temporary, then how are you going to find it in the Impergum? If you don't have the reduction in the temporary, how are you going to have, you know, so Jan and I listened to this guy, and he said, you only need three burrs, blah, 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 blah. And we would sit there and do the prep. We'd pack a zero cord. We'd pack a one cord. We'd make the temporary. And sometimes you take the temporary off, you're trimming the temporary with loops on. You're like, well, where the hell's the margin? Well, it probably doesn't exist. But you could see that better on a white acrylic temporary than you could on a dark purple Impergum. I still don't know why. Why don't they just change it to black? I mean, they're only like one color away from the worst color of reflecting light.
Do they even make a light body either or something that goes with it? Or is it just the purple Impergum?
No, there's a light body with the Impergum.
We still use it because I work with a 54-year-old. So,
well, you know. I mean, the shit works. White.
And it tastes terrible.
It works. I love the polyether. It's good. It's rigid. And actually for temporaries, I tell my assistants to use it for temporaries. It's so snug when you put it on.
So you're not anti-technology. You're just saying
not anti-technology. It's just that if buying a CAD CAM is exactly like buying a Steinway piano. When you get that piano delivered, it's going to take you 10,000 hours to learn how to play Beethoven. Your lab man already did the 10,000 hours. And a lot of dentists, you say, do you like lab work? Hell no, I hate lab work, but I like technology. Okay, that makes no sense. And then if you don't like it, then you tell your assistant to do it. But what I'm looking at is you bought this $150,000 piece of technology where every 2 or 3 years you need to come back and give them $6,000 more for whatever.
That's true.
You buy these oral scanning technologies and they say, well, yeah, and we need a $200 a month in perpetuity for your lease upware updates. $200 a month? Shit, I'm not buying $200 a month in Impergum. Now I just have to give you $200 a month just for my update bullshit. And I'm still missing $17,000 that if this market tanked tomorrow, wouldn't you like to buy $17,000 of Google or Facebook or Apple if it tanked tomorrow? Yeah. But you don't. It just seems like every time a millennial has a great idea, it always involves a shitload of debt. That's why I tell millennials, just quit thinking. Every time. In fact, I joke to millennials that they should go into the dental office and have a big old whiteboard every morning at the staff huddle. Say, hey, I woke up this morning with a great idea and I'm going to write it down. And I pay you guys not to let me do it. Okay. this is my idea. And it always involves debt, credit card, leasing, buying. And here's my idea. Why don't you go in there in the morning and say, hey, we work 16 days a month. And all of our bills for everything, you, me, everything, we have to do $2,000 to break even. So let's go do $2,000 and then we'll go to lunch. Oh, that ain't millennials are. Millennials say, well, we had a cancellation 11 to 12. So we just sat around on Facebook. And then at 12, we went to lunch because we're an entitled like the government. And I'm like, well, you're entitled to going to lunch at 12. You didn't even pay the bills yet. And if you had a cancellation 11, why don't you eat a banana right then? Because someone's on the phone at 11:30 and they said they could get here at noon. And we told them they can come down. We don't give a shit about your lunch hour. We're going to hit our BAM number, our bare ass minimum break-even point. Then we can take a break. And then we're going to come back and do it again. If we come back and do it again, we got 50% overhead. But I go in there and they get in there at 7:30. They don't even turn the phones on until 8:05. They're going to lunch at 12 to 1, even if the entire morning canceled and no-showed. And they're leaving at 5, even though the doctor might have lost money for the day. And if you want 50% overhead, you know what to do. You just decide you're not going to do it. You decide, well, it's fair that since I got out of dental school, I should get a new car. It's fair that I should eat lunch from 12 to 1, even though I'm morbidly obese.
I don't think that's generational, though. I don't think that's just millennial. I think that's all dentists. I mean, I think the majority of dentists aren't looking at those things and doing those things. I mean, I think that's why most dentists are retiring, why most dentists are working at 65, because they're they're doing all those things you're saying. I think the difference actually with us, where, you know, I mean, yes, there's a the problem is with the world we live in now, with social media, the access to information, that all the shit millennials do is just now it's broadcast to the world. So I feel like the 10% that do really stupid stuff end up becoming the name for the majority of us, right? And so, but the flip side of that though is that, you know, that's where I say, and I know you we joke and laugh, but I'm telling you, there's a lot of really talented millennials out there who are young dentists who are going to utilize a lot of this. And I mean, the access to information. I mean, what we can learn now that what you know, you had to fly somewhere, do something. And I'm not saying that going to places is bad. I'm a huge advocate of that. But you know, our access to information is incredible. And so if we will actually use it and utilize it, we can get really good really quick and really help ourselves improve to where that I think that's where the older dentist is going to have to be careful, because you know, we're going to make ourselves a lot more attractive to patients because of a lot of things you're talking about that they're not doing.
You know, I agree with the transparency thing, because like people always say, well, if poverty was related to crime, well, how come we didn't have any crime during the Great Depression from 32 to 36? Because no one wrote it down. You know, yeah, I mean, yeah. If someone come and stole your cow, I mean, how would we know that? You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, they just don't know. Yeah, I think all people are the same. I think millennials, the differences between millennials will be, you know, it's that generational pattern. Everybody thinks the next generation is not doing good. I think that every generation gets smarter. Hell, in 1880, 80% of the planet couldn't read or write. Now we have 4.5 billion out of 7.5 billion people living in a house with a smartphone with 52 million pages of Wikipedia. I think when Jobs stuck the internet and the smartphone from 2007, that next 100 years will be the greatest century we've ever had, because we're going to go from illiteracy to literacy. But I do think this is undeniable about millennials. I mean, when I was a little kid, every farmer I knew worked sun up to sundown on their farm 7 days a week. Every dad I knew that had the 8-to-5 job as whatever had a weekend job. One of my friends I went to dental school with from the 7th grade to the dental school, his mom and dad were both a pharmacist, and they both had part-time jobs and they were pharmacists. And I just see, and then I see you go to hire an associate. You go to an associate and say, well, how about 2 nights a week? You stay till 7. What? Well, I'm not staying till 7. Oh, how about one Saturday a month? You come in for 4 hours. Hell no. What do you think? Yeah. I'm an idiot. You want me to stay till 7 and work 1 4-hour Saturday a month? Are you out of your freaking mind? It's like, dude, your grandpa on Sunday would get up his son up, and he had farm chores till he couldn't walk and it was dark and he couldn't see. And you can't do 1 4-hours. I mean, I'm telling you, a lot of people say the millennials have less children, you know, later in life, they're going to have less kids because they treat a child as like an economic purchase. They'd rather have vacation and condo. I say the birth rate's declining with millennials is because they're too lazy to fuck.
We're working too hard. This has been fantastic. I think so many of this stuff is, I mean, I'm excited. The financing thing, I'm going back first thing Monday morning and we're going to reevaluate that. And all this stuff has been really, really important. So,
a word of wisdom, really honestly, everything you said is so true. I cannot agree with you in every single subject as far as what the pattern, especially about the pattern of how this generation is not really a generational thing. It just keeps coming and going, and just the way that everything you explained. One quick thing I'd like to ask you, and I don't know if you mind sharing with me, the future of Dental Town and the future of education and CE online versus what you want to do with the whole Dental Town.
That's a great question. I mean, my generation, if you wanted to learn from Carl Misch, you bought his damn textbook for $118. You read his textbook. Your generation has to fly across the country, stay in a resort, drop $5,000 for a weekend. And like on Dental Town, we put up 450 courses. And some of these, like the endo continuum, I mean, people don't realize this, but that endo continuum that's like 21 hours long cost $1 million and a decade to film and tape. And you can buy that for less than the cost of flying Southwest Airlines to whatever institute you're going for. I mean, it seems like every time they want to learn one thing, they'll come back from an institute where they drop $4,000 on a weekend on TMJ, and I'll just sit there at the bar saying, hey, you know, just here's a piece of paper, here's a pencil, just please, just write down everything you know now that you didn't know. They can't even fill up a page. And I'm like, God, we could Google Amazon books and type TMJ. There's a gazillion TMJ courses on Dentaltown for $18, but the way you did it costs $4,000.
So, no, it is so true. And it's funny that you brought that up because I get a lot of people ask me about the implant and my age, my group, my a lot of my colleagues ask me about, oh, what's the next implant course? What's the best implant course? And there are so many of them these days, so many organization, association. And my number one thing I tell every single one is what you said about buy Carl Mischa's textbook and just start reading a little bit about just the terminology, vocabulary, what abutment is, what's impression coping, and know a little bit more than before you go to any of these weekend $5,000 courses, because not only that $5,000, you might not ever use it, because again, we go back to like having the patient, having all of that implemented in your practice before you do any of these sort of CEs of spending $5,000. But at the same time, that just education, the textbooks and things like you said, $17 that you could get on a fingertip on Dentaltown. Those are some of the great things a lot of young dentists could use right out of school.
And on the same lines, I feel like the other issue kind of just goes back to the $5,000 and the resort and all that is we also just want to live in the city. I mean, you think with $350,000 debt, we would be willing to go work in a rural area and make bank and pay that off and then move around. I mean, we don't really.
See, that's the problem with rural areas right now. Dentistry is amazing. I feel like so much money you could make. I had a prosthodontist friend who called from Montana, and he was asking about a denture clinic and extraction. I was like, dude, I want to get on this with you because I already know it's a great, great thing to do in a rural area. You can do so much money.
And Melinda, here's another deal. Not only are they lazy and entitled, they won't work past 5. They won't come in on a Saturday. But look at their grandparents. Their grandparents came from another country with the shirt on their back in a land they didn't speak the language. And you can't go a mile away from Memphis. That's lazy.
The good part, though, is entitled and what was the other word you said we were? We were entitled and what?
Lazy.
Lazy. As an entitled lazy are.
I do remember the word lazy.
I kind of was like, "Dad, gum, screw you." Well, but my thing is, it's like as entitled as I am, and as much as I want it now, you know, that's also one of the things that I think that those of us that are going to be very successful, that's what drives us. Because you know what? Yeah, I want it now, and I don't have a problem with that. But you know what? I'm going to do. I'm going to go get it. I'm going to go freaking get it. And so I think there's a difference between some. You know, some young dentists and some millennials or whatever you want to call them that you know, they are entitled lazy and they want it to just come to them. But at the same time, there's a lot of them that's going to be – it's going to push them. And I think that's where we're going to be really successful because we're going to take advantage of exactly what you said. We're going to take advantage of the fact that we can get a full-on endo continue on Dentaltown for, you know, not much money, or that I can go watch tons of YouTube videos on how to do locator dentures or, you know, you name it. So the flip side – you know, I get that part, but you know, my thing is too, is like, man, if you're a young dentist, take freaking advantage of all this because we have the opportunity to be so much, you know, more educated and learn so much more quickly and make so much more money so earlier on our career than y'all did because of the access to information.
Yeah. You know, everything's got to pass my 4-finger test. Is this the fastest, the easiest, the lowest cost and the highest quality? And I can learn. I mean, I did a podcast yesterday with an occlusion TMJ guy from Canada. He's written 4 textbooks, and you can buy them all for $99. A millennial wouldn't consider that. He'd say, well, wouldn't it be easier for me to just fly to Canada and stay in a resort and go skiing a Banff on the side and then miss half his lecture?
The real part is we probably would be like, well, that doesn't sound fun and flashy entertaining, so we want to go take the implant course. That's the other part.
But let me tell you about the implants because it's the same pattern. It's not right or wrong. It's just the same pattern that we talked about earlier. Don't send your crown and bridge across the country. Find somebody who's done 10,000 crowns in your town that you can meet with. And when you show up there, you know, call them and say, you got to pretend you're humble. You got to say, hey, you want me to pick up a sub sandwich, a couple of tacos? You want a Wendy's burger? Just something. So he realizes this is actually that one human dentist that we kept hearing about that would show up one day riding a unicorn, dating the tooth fairy, and then, you know, and get a relationship, and you say, look, if you can make me better, please let me know. Well, that's how you learn implants. So almost in Memphis, probably two-thirds of all the periodontal oral surgeons think in fear and scarcity. They don't want you to learn it. They just want you to refer to it. Like, look, if you want to do implants right, you send them all to me because I'm an oral surgeon and you're a Neanderthal. And, you know, I've done 10,000. I did implants before you were born, you know. But one-third mm-hmm. realizes this pattern, which is a very interesting pattern. The number one thing you learn at learning how to do Invisalign and implants is you become a better diagnostician and you see it and you train. It's all in your head. Now, every dentist eventually figures out that whatever you learn, if you don't do it at least one time a week, which is 50 times a year, you're never going to make money at it. So you get into sleep apnea. Well, if you better do a sleep apnea appliance every week, because if you're doing one once a month, you're so slow, inefficient, you lose money. Same with implants. You can't place, you cannot make $1 in profit placing 20 implants a year. You're not fast enough, good enough. Every time there's an implant out, your assistants are like, okay, now what do we do again? And your failure rate's off the chart. What if you needed a vasectomy? Would you want to go to some guy who does it every day or every other month?
Every day.
Yeah. So the litmus test for profitability is once a week. Well, the really smart thinking and hope, growth, and abundance periodontist, oral surgeon, orthodontist, they all know that. They know that everybody that went to Richard Litz and Brock Rondeau and Sheridan and Harry Green, everybody got into ortho 2 years later, like, screw this. I don't even want to do it. So they're sitting there. I know orthodontists who will tell everybody in a 1 hour drive, hey, if you want to learn Invisalign, I got a little Invisalign study club. It's a first Wednesday every month. Bring your cases. I'll help you. Because he knows you just want to do crown and bridge and fillings and root canals, and you're not going to be doing Invisalign. And even if you do them, now he's got a relationship with you. So you want to learn how to place implants? You don't need to go to goddamn Dominican Republic. You tell me no one will teach you how to place implants in Memphis, Tennessee for free? Are you shitting me?
Yeah.
And a lot of these periodontists, they want to extend their social network, but they're afraid of their own shadow. They're introverts. They're geeks. It scares them when they even see themselves in the mirror. And now you're going to be their friend. And they'll say, oh, yeah, well, you know, I'll line up my surgeries on your day off or the time that's whatever. And then you meet their rep. And then you get this social network. I mean, you should be able to learn all your Invisalign, all your implants without driving 1 hour from your house for free. But that's how our generation did it. And those are some of my best drinking buddies on earth. I mean, the people I go get drunk with watching an Arizona Cardinals game and eating a bunch of healthy wings are dentists in my zip code who practice across the street. When two-thirds of the dentists across the street live in fear and scarcity and all that, you saw my patient. I saw your patient. I mean... Was it a slave? I mean, is it chained up in your basement? I mean, how did this happen? I didn't know that you owned a patient, and I didn't know. I thought you couldn't own anybody in the world. And but the one-third of all those dentists, just like you two, I just love the fact that there's three homie dentists on Dental Town who show up in a dental office and sit on the couch. And I mean, you're already successful. You're already successful because what you just did, that pattern, you can now go do it with an orthodontist learn Invisalign, an oral surgeon and periodontist learn implants. Just do everything faster, smarter, easier, lower, higher quality. So ask yourself, what's the cheapest way to learn endo? Should I fly all the way to California, to Santa Monica, and go listen to Cliff Ruddle? Or should I buy the endo textbook? If I don't like reading, what would be cheaper? The endo course online by the same damn instructor, you know, for $19. And if you just start living by those rules, is this faster? Is this easier? Is this higher quality? Is this lower cost? What do you think I learn more from? Going to Carl Misch, sitting in his lecture for 8 flipping hours, or reading his damn textbook?
Probably reading the textbook.
And what do you think was more organized? And which one had less jokes about his ex-wives?
I don't know. Maybe the textbook might be enough.
So I would just really promote minimalism. And the thing that you're going to learn about minimalism is that when you buy a big house, it's a money pit. Everything you buy. Well, if I'm going to buy a boat, that'll make me happy. Okay, now you spend all your weekends trying to get your damn boat running. You got to go half the time you deal with your boat. You're taking it in, out. You're doing all this bullshit. You know, Janis Joplin said it the best. She said, freedom is when you have nothing left to lose. And gosh darn it, I can't tell you how many retired patients I had that had million-dollar homes and all that, all throughout Minnesota, North Dakota, and Canada. They sold freaking everything, came down to Phoenix and bought either a trailer or a 1,000-square-foot, one-bedroom, two-bedroom house. They say, oh, my God, I just feel free. I don't have to mow that big yard. I don't have all that shit to take care of.
That's good advice.
I got nothing but cash. Minimalism makes you happy. And these people that buy the biggest house, the biggest boat, the biggest car, the biggest Taj Mahal dental office, usually 20% of them end up at the Betty Ford Center. The other half end up divorced. They're eating Vicodin just to try to control their depression. And so, they say you get divorced over three things, a third money, a third sex, and a third substance abuse. And if you combine the first two, if you start using money to buy sex, it's even worse. So it's money, sex, and substance abuse. And a lot of those dysfunctions are because you're under a lot of stress. You're living in a rat cage. And you got this big nut, you drive to work. And also on that BAM number, when your staff is always going to come to you want to raise, because raises are always based only on astrology. They say, hey, the earth has just gone around the sun, so I need another dollar.
Yeah.
Okay, well, in that journey, when that earth went around the sun, when it started a year ago, our break-even point number was 2,000. So we went around the sun, and now our break-even point is 2,500. And wasn't that because you wanted all those instruments that aren't sharpened, and you wanted this, and you wanted that, and you want a new autoclave? How come every time you come in here, my break-even point goes up, and then you want more money? Why don't I tell you this? Why don't we have the earth go around the sun? And if you can lower my BAM number, I'll give you more money. Are we doing everything like faster, easier, higher quality, lower cost?
Lower cost.
I love it. That's fantastic.
And
that's,
you're not going to lunch until we hit our BAM number. You're not entitled to lunch. And I'll tell you what, if we don't break even till 3 o'clock, and we close at 5, and at 4:30, someone calls up with a toothache, and we know they're going to give us their credit card for a root canal, billum, crown. Somebody is going to stay here and do that root canal, billum, crown. Someone is going to assist that doctor, and if that assistant don't know how to check them out and take the money or whatever, then someone up front's going to stay. Because we didn't break even till 3, so that $2,000 at the end of the day is nothing but net, and then we're back to our goal. And then when we go through the month, if we're coming up on the end of the month and we're not going to hit our break-even point, then you say, you know what? I'm going to have to open up Saturday. Yeah, I'm going to open up you celebrate at the deal. This is Monday, but I'm going to go ahead and open up Saturday because right now we're going to have to do $4,000 a day for 4 days. It's not going to happen. I'm going to blow up on Saturday. And then they might start saying, well, how about this? How about we just do it? Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. How about we're just going to do it? We're going to sell the treatment. We're going to collect the money. We'll work through lunch. We're going to stay late because a millennial would rather go to hell than come in on Saturday.
That's probably true. Well, we just got to do that, you know, and that's part of it's tricky because that's counterintuitive to what the rest of our friends and who, you know, our other millennial buddies are doing. You know, they're living on debt and doing that stuff. So it's kind of tricky, but it is what it is.
Well, hey,
dude, thank you so much.
I'm so proud of you guys. I love your and I want to make one more point about this.
Okay.
So if, you know, you know that you think different than me, a baby boomer. You know that you're the generation ahead of us. They call that the silent generation. And the one before that was the greatest generation, whatever the hell. I see these website bounce rates. Like I fall in love with you guys. On this podcast, I see it's like we're in the same room. This is something I never thought was possible when I was in dental school.
Sure.
And then I go to your website and it's like a mugshot when you got your DUI and like 10 people go to your website for one that converts and calls the office. You millennials, you like Yelp. I've never even seen Yelp. I've never seen a baby boomer dentist in my life pull out Yelp. I mean, I could imagine sitting at the bar with Tom Madden and Tim Taylor and say, hey, you want to go to that restaurant? Well, let me Yelp review it first. I mean, you know, it's a totally different world. But when they come to your website, they should get this experience. They should get your karma. You should be sitting on the couch saying, hey, let me tell you five reasons you should come see me. You're not going to find anyone better looking. That's obvious. You're going to find no one closer. I mean, I'm in Memphis. How close could you get? You live in Memphis. And we're going to, you know, just make it fun. Make him laugh. Make him giggle. Make him say, in 60 seconds, establish likability and trust. Because all they want to do, they just don't want to get sold a transmission fluid change they don't need. They don't want to buy a new air conditioner they don't need. They just want you to fix it up. And if they like you and they trust you, so go to video on that. So and then measure it. What is your bounce rate? I mean, there are dental websites that 100 people will land on and not one person calls. And then he says, well, what do you recommend for marketing? Well, why don't you get your bounce rate from 10 people land on your website to one calls? Why don't you maybe get it 5 people lands on your website in one calls. And then when they call, do you measure that? No. Well, most dental offices, 3 to 4 people have to call before your untrained receptionist, who you name her entire career after a piece of furniture. You're the front desk. And you're a piece of furniture. In every other business, they're incoming telemarketing. So then you measure. Well, how many calls? Okay, so Valerie, you got 100 phone calls and only scheduled 35 appointments. I mean, I think out of 100 phone calls you could have. Then I asked you, well, why were the conversion rate? Well, half of them went to voicemail. And I asked you, well, how many of your calls went to voicemail? No idea. Well, how many that went to voicemail did anyone even listen to? No idea. Well, what are you doing this weekend?
I'm flying to the Panky Institute to learn how to adjust canine guided occlusion.
Really? Yep. That's your biggest problem? 10 people on your website before one calls, 4 people call before you get one ass in the chair, and then 3 people are told they have a cavity and only one gets it done. So to do that one cavity, I need 3 people in the chair. To get 3 people in the chair, I needed 9 people to call. To get 9 people to call, I needed 90 to land on my website. And your best idea is that you need to get some alphabet soup title behind your last DDS name?
Yeah,
so true.
Yeah, that's pretty. Yeah,
so then your hygienist sees 8 people. She wants a raise because the earth went around the sun one time. It's all based on, I guess, Magellan or Pinocchio or whoever. And she sees 8 people. She sees 8 people, but she only schedules for a recall. So she just lost 25% of your business in one day and wants a raise.
Her portion. Yeah.
Yeah. So what's her reappointment way? She doesn't want to schedule the appointment because she knows she sucks. So she's going to hand you the chart to the lady named after furniture and say, hey, front desk lady, you schedule for a recall. And then the front desk lady says to you, well, do you want to schedule a 6-month recall? I'll call you. And that's why when the average dentist gets 5,000 up to 5,000 charts, 4,000 of them don't come back. No hygienist, I'm paying you $40 an hour. You schedule a damn recall because incoming sales, I don't know when the phone's going to ring. And when that phone rings, incoming telemarketing needs to take that call and try to convert them to an appointment. You schedule a recall. And furthermore, you're the one getting $40 an hour. So I want to see what your close rate is on getting him reappointed. How come I got 2 hygienists and one can reappoint 95% of her clients to come back in 3, 4, 6 months, but half a year's never want to come back? Maybe you're a bitch. Maybe you talk down to people. Maybe you just talk about yourself. Why don't you go get your hair done? Listen, go find, you should only get your hair done by a cosmetologist that you can't get into that will tell you, yeah, I've had these 100 ladies for 10 years. Okay, I want to see some of that. I want to smell that. They're not talking about their husband and his dirty laundry and their babies. They're talking about you and your family and your babies. All they're on stage, man. I mean, when you go get your mani-pedi done, I mean, they always say, you want the sea salt rubbed in? I mean, where did this come from? What Homo sapien decided they need sea salt rubbed into their calves? But it's that whole experience of, I like you because you're talking about me. You're not just trimming my nails. You're rubbing sea salt in my calf. And I get a vent to somebody about how horrible my husband is and my children and my neighbors. And the life is so, so horrible, you know, whatever. But you need staff like that. You need staff like they're doing the mani-pedi, like they're cutting your hair. That's the staff you need.
Ultimately, basically, this all boils down to what you're, you know, be a likable person who can communicate well, you and your whole team and staff, and the 99% of the problems we're worrying about are going to slowly fix themselves because we're not, you know, we're focusing on the wrong things.
And you'll hire your front desk. You'll say, well, I'm going to hire Susie Q because she has 10 years experience. And I'm like, okay, well, let's talk about her last practice. What would that look like? I don't know. Well, did you talk to the nurse? No, he actually killed himself. After he committed suicide, she decided to come work for me. So I figure I'm about 10 years from hanging myself with rope. And it's like I don't even want experience staff that came from a horrible experience in office. I'd rather take the hottest Manny Petty chick who has 500 women been following her for 10 years and no one will. And I'd rather get her and teach her the computer and dentistry. I'd rather get the best gosh darn the girl that no one can get into to get their hair done, because those are the ones who have the and I don't like calling it the new patient experience, because it's got to be every patient experience every day.
Right.
I love it. Holy cow.
This has been a great episode.
I know. Well, these are just, I mean, they're just basically, this is exactly what I wanted, because we've gotten, you know, nugget that we need to be. We love nuggets.
Chicken nuggets.
And implement. Exactly. Yes. We will implement.
We'll call this an episode. Chicken McNuggets.
The Chicken McNuggets with Howard Ferrand. I like that.
That's a good one.
But you're 51% dentist and you're 49% people person. It's the bottom line. And you don't need more dental technology, expensive overhead shit. You need to learn how to attract and retain the best employees. And the lady up front is the most important person in the office because she's taking inbound calls. The only person that's more important than the receptionist is your damn website. And nobody tracks the conversion rate to that. And when they call that office for the first time, that better be your best, likable, trusting employee you've got. And, and then when they come, what are you going to do? Someone's going to take her back for x-rays. Well, that dental assistant, she better be rocking hot like the Manny Petty lady. she needs to be the best cosmetologist in town. And who shows up last? The dentist. Least important. It's like if you own an NFL team, you want a quarterback. I want the website to crush it. I want inbound receiving telemarketing to be the best live monkey on your team. Your dental assistant to be the next. And by the time you walk in, you could be a cyclops with one eye, and your team would say, hey, he's only got one eye, but damn, can he see that eye?
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's all right, fantastic. Guys. Well, I'm going to make you proud. I'm going to make the video. I'm going to get our team and make a video on our front page that's basically like five reasons you should come to us, or three reasons you come to us in 60 seconds. I'm doing that. That's that.
Yeah, man.
I'm going to send you links.
Get likable and trust in video, because like if I just saw two still pictures of you, I wouldn't feel anything.
Like douchebag one and douchebag two.
but when I see you, I feel something. You know, why do people like scary movies? Because they want to feel something. Why do people like roller coasters? They want to feel something. That's what a human, that's what life is. Life is, I want to feel something. And when I look at your photo, am I feeling anything? And wouldn't I feel more if it was a video? And this stuff is so obvious, but humans move slow. I mean, for 40 years, they had silent movies and record players. It took 40 years before one monkey thought, should we add those two together? And that was an explosion. Then the third monkey came and said, hey, I'll add popcorn. Now they can eat, see, smell, hear, and the movie industry has never farted since. I mean, make them land on your website and feel something. Scare them. Make them laugh. Make them feel something, and you'll convert them to come in. And whoever picks up that call is 10 times more important than you. So you treat her with respect. You be humble. You respect her. You be nice. I mean, who would want to piss off the lady on incoming calls? You go to any call center and they got people, every time you make a call, they'll give you a scratch lotto ticket. They're feeding you. They got measurements. They have contests of who's converted the most calls. I mean, when's the last time you went to your front desk, say, I'll tell you what, we measure our calls. We get 20 inbound calls a day. Every damn incoming call that you schedule, I'm gonna walk across the street myself, my own fat ass, and buy you a lotto ticket. I hope you get 10 people in today and win $1 million by five. I mean, just the fact that you're even focusing on it, you'll crush it. And I smell that you guys are both gonna crush it.
We hope so. We appreciate it. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. We're excited.
All right. Have a great day, guys.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.